cooperation and to adhere to the guidelines with regards to the conduct of tonight's meeting. Everyone should ensure their mobile phones are turned off or switched to silent, and use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant message facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting by hanging up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except for councillors considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you do wish to speak on an item, use the instant message facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. Members should ensure their cameras are switched on when speaking. Cameras should also be switched on when a vote is being taken. And also to remind members to keep their instant messaging to the following letters: Q for a question, P to propose, and S for if you wish to second. Please refrain from making any other comments using instant messaging. And if two councillors propose at the same time, the person who proposed first will be taken as the proposer, and the person who proposed second will be recorded as the seconder. Now, maybe Sarah, can I ask you, have we any apologies in for tonight?
Apologies from Councillors Doran and Councillor McAvoy.
Okay, thank you. Have we any other apologies from the floor itself?
Councillor Lewis, Chair.
Councillor Lewis. I think there's one from Councillor Trainer as well, Sarah.
Councillor Mulgrew.
Right. Okay, thank you, Valerie. Okay, thank you for that. So in terms of remarks for this evening, I suppose firstly what I wanted to do was congratulate Councillor Leanne McAvoy. Leanne, as many of you will know, had a wee boy a couple of weeks ago who's called Pat. So on behalf of the council, we wish Leanne and her husband Niall all the best for the future. It's very welcome in these times to hear some good news, so we're all delighted for Leanne and her family. I also wish now to highlight the COVID-19 vaccination programme and encourage all citizens to avail of the opportunity when it presents itself. And if you are offered the vaccine, to take up the opportunity to protect yourself and others in our community and help us all to get to a better place. And the other item I wanted to mention during Chairman's remark was obviously now that we're in March, it's actually census month. So as we know, this month we'll see the gathering of information for our census. It happens every 10 years and it gives us all the most accurate estimate of all the people and households in Northern Ireland. So the information we all provide helps decide services that are planned and funded in local areas. And this can mean things like doctor surgeries, houses, new bus routes or whatever. So we all encourage people to respond as promptly as they can, and it can be done online for the first time, which is very welcome. We also need to just mention, obviously I know many of you will see the numbers of visitors we've had to our district over the past weekend in particular. I know, like many of members around this virtual table, we've all been sent photographs of areas which were simply packed. I think the one of Newcastle's main street was most concerning. We all cannot be complacent, and whilst our vaccination programme is encouraging, we are far from out of the woods. So again, I'm asking people to exercise caution. If you arrive at a spot and it's busy, please go elsewhere if you're exercise, and don't let the good work that's taken place over the cold, dark winter months be ruined. And continue to adhere to the PHA guidance, as well as exercising your own personal responsibility whenever you arrive at an area. So that was one thing that I wanted to mention. Lastly, you've all been circulated probably late this morning with an emergency notice of motion from Councillors Sharvin and Byrne regarding the Bank of Ireland closures in the district and throughout the north. As this is an emergency request, it's going to be taken at the end of business this evening, and as you know, will require 80% of those present and voting. So just give you the advance notice that vote will be coming up. Okay, can we now look for any declarations of interest? Okay. Sorry, Councillor Brown, you have a question there?
Chair, it was just on the point around visitors flocking to Newcastle. Fully share your thoughts on that.
Sorry, Patrick, I'm not opening up the floors for comments for everybody in terms of the numbers of visitors in our district, because we'd be here all evening. That was just my opening remarks, if that's okay. So we're going to move on now to the next item that's on the agenda, which is item number 3, and that's obviously the main business that we have this evening to set the district rate. So I could maybe hand over to Marie, is that correct, for you to take us through that item?
Sorry, Chair, Councillor Owen has a declaration of interest to declare.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Yes, Councillor Owen, go on ahead.
Thanks very much, Chair. Just to let you know, obviously, that you all
familiar. I'm a student, so regarding the student one later on, I will be getting out and saying nothing on it and not voting if I need to. Thank you.
Sorry, Councillor, what section is that you're referring to?
It's one of the last motions that's up later on. Okay. I can't remember which one it is, but I just know what's on there. So
that's okay.
All right.
That declaration, that's great. Okay, thank you. We'll move on then to item number 3 and hand over to Maria as Chief Executive.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. So, members, you have a paper in front of you tonight, but I am also going to just set out some of the key and salient points within that paper. So, in accordance with the requirements of the Local Government Finance Act 2011, as Chief Executive and as the Chief Financial Officer, I'm required to provide assurance to you as members on the robustness of the revenue estimates and the adequacy of the Council's reserves position as part of the rate-setting process. Detailed estimates have been formulated, presented and scrutinised by members via the Strategic Finance Working Group meetings, and these have taken into account past outturn, current spending plans and likely future demand and pressures. In the year that is in it, there are significant uncertainties, and I just want to draw your attention to those as Chief Executive. So the first uncertainty is the future impact of COVID. The current year, as we all know, has been unprecedented. The impact of COVID has significantly impacted on Council's operations and finances in this year. The future impact of COVID and operations on our rate base and our finances is uncertain, and many assumptions are included in our budgets for 2021-22, and they're 2.2, and Drina's Director of Corporate Services will cover those. In addition, there are a number of other significant uncertainties within the current estimates. The draft budget at the Northern Ireland Executive level. The Northern Ireland Executive is currently determining a budget for Northern Ireland for 2021-22 with a draft budget out for consultation. In the absence of an agreed and legislative budget, there are some significant uncertainties which remain at the time of striking the district rate. Included within our 2021-22 estimates are various areas of funding received from central government, and we have included amounts on the basis of our previous arrangements with central government. However, it is important to note that until such times as the budget is agreed by the Northern Ireland Executive, these funding streams will remain uncertain. The rate support grant. Councils have been advised of the percentage allocations of rate support grant being made available by the Department for Communities for 2021-22. However, until a draft budget is agreed, the total amount of rate support grant to be awarded to the local government sector is not yet confirmed. Uncertainties surrounding Brexit. Various uncertainties remain as to the impact of Brexit on the Northern Ireland economy and Uri Mornin Down District Council rate base and funding streams, and no provision has been made in the estimates for any financial implications arising. Furthermore, included within our 2021-22 estimates are various areas of funding received from the European Union under programmes which we have been advised will continue during the period 21-22. So I am satisfied that the estimates presented, subject to the significant uncertainties noted above, should provide adequate financial resources to support the running costs of the Council for 21-22, and that reasonable consideration of the financial risk to the Council as known to us have been made in the preparation of the estimates. The minimum prudent level of reserves that the Council should maintain is a matter of judgment. SIPFA guidance does not set a statutory minimum level, but advised councils to have reserves appropriate to meet your medium-term financial commitments. Therefore, it is up to the council itself, taking into account all the relevant local circumstances, to make a professional judgment on what the appropriate level of reserves and balances should be. The Strategic Finance Working Group have proposed the establishment of two new reserves which focus on the long-term recovery of the district from the impact of COVID and also serves to protect the financial viability of the council and the ratepayer of the district from any longer-term economic impacts of the pandemic. Following the establishment of these reserves, the general fund reserve of council is expected to be in the region of £13 million at the 1st of April 2021, representing around 21% of our gross expenditure. So I'm therefore content as the Chief Financial Officer of the organisation that the current reserves held by the Council are adequate. I would also remind members that we have a legislative responsibility to strike the rate tonight. The normal practice would have been that we would have been striking the rate on the 15th of February. An amendment to the legislation as a result of COVID means that we must strike our rate prior to midnight on the 1st of March. I'm going to hand over to Dorina, who will take you through the key factors contributing to the proposed rate increase in 2021-2022.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you, Chair. So members, you'll see in front of you then at 2.2 of the paper, there are a number of key factors which have contributed to your proposed rate increase for the 21-22 year. We have included assumptions around the continued impact of COVID and how that will continue to affect council services into next year. We have included within our budget for next year a 2% pay increase for local government employees. That is an estimate at this stage and is not yet confirmed. We have included estimates around increased tonnages and associated increased cost of waste and recycling as a result of the COVID pandemic, and we foresee that continuing into next year. We have, as Marie has already pointed out, we have factored in assumptions around the rate support grant allocation, and we're assuming that the total amount allocated will be as laid out in the draft budget, but again, that is not yet certain. And we have included the assumption that councils will continue to receive some element of financial assistance from central government, as we've been fortunate enough to receive in the current financial year. So, members, moving on then to section 3 of the report, members are asked to approve the considerations that have been laid out in front of you tonight and the recommendations arising from the Strategic Finance Working Group in relation to the detailed work that has been going on around the rate setting process. The action sheets of the working group are included at Appendix 6 for your approval. And members, we ask that having regard to the Chief Executive Statement as required by the Local Government Finance Act, Northern Ireland 2011, that you take the following recommendations tonight. Number one, to approve an increase in the district rate for 21-22 of 1.59% based on an estimated penny product of 2520986. Meaning a non-domestic rate of 23.9970 pence and a domestic rate of 0.4067 pence. We're asking that you approve the establishment of two new reserves of council, namely a COVID revitalisation reserve and an economic recovery reserve. Thirdly, you're asked to approve the medium-term financial plan and authorise 21-22 expenditure as included in the estimates, and that's detailed at Appendix 1. You're asked to approve a capital strategy report for 21-22 as required by the SIPFA Prudential Code, and that's included at Appendix 2. At 5, you're asked to approve the capital programme, which is included at Appendix 3. Number 6, you're asked to approve the Treasury Management Strategy Statement 21-22, and that's included at Appendix 4. You're also asked to approve the Minimum Revenue Provision Statement of Council for the year 21-22, included at Appendix 5, and to note the action sheets of the Strategic Finance Working Group that have been included as part of the rate setting process at Appendix 6. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Victorina. Okay, we've got a P and a Q in from Councillor Clark. Willie, do you want to go on ahead there?
Yeah, thanks very much, Chair. And thanks very much for that report. I propose that we accept the officer's recommendation of increasing the rate to 1.59%. I think it's a fair rate. In regards to trying to protect ratepayers and at the same time protect the resources of the organisation. And I suppose at the heart of this, what I would say is that the council during the COVID pandemic has been at the heart of delivering for communities, be it from working together and with our statutory partners in the third sector and the communities, and getting food to the most vulnerable, and delivering prescriptions and whatever else to the most needy. It showed you the best about community planning and how we can progress in the future in regards to that. I just thought I'd mention that at the start. I suppose at the heart of the rate is the COVID revitalisation and getting the economy back up and running. And we have put a budget in regards to getting businesses back up and running and getting people back to work and getting communities back to normal. So that's at the heart of the increase. And also, as been mentioned, in regards to protecting frontline jobs and also services, and also the 2% estimated pay increase has been built into that also. So I think that's worth mentioning also. And I suppose talking from the Sinn Féin's point of view, we see the work of the Strategic Finance Working Group was very, very beneficial. And I would like to pay tribute to everybody who was involved in that process, directors and council, councillors, everybody who played any role whatsoever, because it was a long, long piece of work that had to be, worked through. So I'd just like to put that on record. So but moving forward, it is changing times, it's uncertain times, but I'm sure we have to show the leadership as a council and bring our communities out of this pandemic, and hopefully in the summer we'll be in a better place. So, Chair, happy to propose.
Thanks very much, Willie. Move on then to Councillor Walker.
Chair, thank you very much, and I will second the proposal, and I can concur with everything that Councillor Clark has said. And I want to put in record from our party our gratitude to the Finance Working Group for the sterling work they've done over the last year. Also, our senior management team to getting us to where we are under very, very difficult circumstances. Now, I believe this is a balanced rate, 1.59. When you look at other councils or striking rates, I've seen it in the press where they're 2% plus, so they are. So we're well in there when it's down the table. So we are. And one good thing is there's no cuts within this. Our projects remain on track, so they do. No cuts whatsoever. So that is a good thing. And it is because of the hard work that was carried out by the working group and the senior management team. And that work will start again next month, so it will, when the groups start to meet again. And the good thing is that it meets all year round, and that and it's evident here that they have done sterling work. So I'm privileged to second the proposal.
Thank you very much, Billy. Councillor, we've got a few members looking in first of all, then we obviously take up to the vote. Councillor Byrne, you're in next there.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I agree with the previous two councillors in the sense that the work that went on through the Strategic Finance Working Group, the rates process usually kicks off maybe 2 months or a month and a half before we strike the rate every year. And we go through the process in November and December. And I think we kicked it off a bit earlier this year, and there was a lot of work done in the Strategic Finance Working Group. And where we were at the start, coming out of two lockdowns and the financial position of being so uncertain, and the rate that that was being bandied about to where we got to shows the amount of work that was done. And the SDLP did work very closely with all the councillors that engaged in the Strategic Finance Working Group over the last couple of months, and that's why we've got down to 1.59. We've made no secret of it that we wanted to get down to nothing. We didn't want to see people having any pressures on them in a time that was so uncertain. But that's through no fault of the council and the council officers who've done a sterling work to get us down to that level. I mean, we have to say to ourselves when we push it down so low to continue to push on, and what does the 0% look like? It would be cuts to our services, and we certainly made a decision in the Strategic Finance Working Group not to cut any of our services. We thought outside the box. We had the two funds set up in the COVID revitalisation scheme and the Economic Recovery Reserve, and I think that's the council and the council officers thinking outside the box, and that will help businesses and people right across our district to be able to draw down funding in what is going to be a very difficult time for people in the months ahead. But I do think that the council, as well, to get down to 1.59, we are protected by, yes, the council thinking outside the box, but a lot of assumptions. And there's a frustration there for us as the SDLP with the level of assumptions. And I think The work that we had done in-house in local government, we certainly should have seen people coming with the same thinking outside the box ideas in central government. And I'm talking about the likes of the draft budget, and the chief executive touched on the draft budget there at the start about the rate support grant. And the rate support grant is the same as it was last year on the draft budget. I know the consultation just finished there on Thursday, and we don't have clarity around it. And I think that local government should have been protected. We talked about through the 11 councils about protecting the losses of local government, and we've been shouting from the rooftops for the last year. And I really think that central government or Westminster should have stepped in to protect it. We didn't have to force any increase onto the ratepayer. I understand that businesses also have a rate holiday, and so it's the domestic ratepayer that gets on to us. But so I do think that some more clarity around some of the DFC funding, I do think some clarity around the request to capitalise some of our costs, all that would have helped us. And I know there was an announcement that we could strike a different rate for domestic and non-domestic, and that would help if we had that maybe a wee bit earlier. And I don't think any council right across the 11 councils, although some may use it, I don't think anybody would be able to get any great benefit out of it, because to strike a different rate when you've got businesses on a rate holiday, you're just pushing it on to the domestic rate payer. But it, all in all, in saying that, I mean, the good work of the council, we have to step back and see what was done throughout the year. The work that went on with the community groups, the food parcels, the community coordination hubs at the start was absolutely astonishing. I mean, the council do not get enough credit for the work that was rolled out when we went into delegated authority at the start, and we were dealing with the onset of this pandemic back in March, when there were so many unknowns. And I think all council officers and council staff stood up to the mark. We had business support programmes that were rolled out, and I know a lot of businesses that I was pushing on online programmes got on to me and said that was really beneficial. People that wanted to get an online presence as businesses that didn't have one before, knowing right now the position that we find ourselves in, we need to have an online presence. Council running out course on that, I thought it was excellent. The refuse staff, the people in the HRCs, we can't forget through the first lockdown, the sterling work that they had done. And we have finally got to the end of this year where we have people that's levelled up. And I know at the end of the year we got an agreement where people have levelled up on pay. And I think that has to be welcomed. And the work that was done through the unions and senior management to get us to that point on councillors engaging, I think was very, very good. I think we're also punching above our weight in terms of council. I know we're the third largest council, but we're punching above our weight in terms of investment and a vision for this district, and I think that can't be forgotten about, because when we look at coming out of this pandemic, we're talking about a possibility of somewhere between 3 and 5% shrinkage in the non-domestic rate base, and we need to be thinking outside the box. So keep that attitude that we had in Strategic Finance Working Group and continue it throughout the year to see if we can try and increase our rate base by having an ambitious plan for this district and hopefully remove the politics from it. But we are punching above our weight in terms of other councils across the north, because the Belfast City Deal and the potential, I will say, funding to come into this district is very promising and very, very exciting. And also, it's not only down in the south of the district, but projects like the regeneration of Downpatrick, and I know that's working in partnership with DFC and other regeneration schemes that went across the district, and you see Newton Hamilton has regeneration schemes as well there. I think all that work can't be forgot about. So, I mean, kudos to the council officers for the work that is done throughout the year. It's been a difficult year. We've got it down as far in the rate as we can, possibly, but I think it's going to be more difficult decisions going ahead. And finally, I will say that I hope that all the councillors will continue to engage productively and collaborate through the Strategic Finance Working Group next month as much as we did in the last 2 months, because we've a lot more work to do, and hopefully we get into a better position next year. But yeah, I want to thank everybody for the work.
Okay, Pete, thanks very much. Councillor Brown, you're in next there.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I want to add to the comments before me to say thank you very much to officers, particularly Dorena and Ken and the team there in finance, who have worked incredibly hard to get what is a fair and balanced and sensible rate. I feel it is below what many other councils are proposing. No ratepayer will want to see a rates rise at the moment, but we are dealing with a particularly volatile economic situation, and I think this is the right amount of balance to help us prepare for the future, and it's great to see that we are putting money aside and starting to plan for recovery and rejuvenation. And help the district's businesses, and also that we are investing in our staff as well through the pay rise. So definitely a lot to be welcomed there. It'll probably come as no surprise that I want to express my deep reservations about the capital program. However, I know we're primarily talking about the rate here, but the capital program has been touched upon. I remain incredibly sceptical, particularly about the budget line relating to the Newry Civic Centre regeneration project, the almost $35 million set aside there, regardless of the $8 million or so it may bring into the district. I still think that that is an ill-thought-out investment against an incredibly uncertain economic climate, particularly with the likely long-term declining need for office space and new ways of working that are likely to be here to stay in the long term. So I want to put that on record. There's a lot of good in the capital program, so I'm certainly not against it, and each individual project will be interrogated and discussed on its merits in coming months and years. But I want to particularly draw attention to my grouping's reservations around that particular budget line and concern there. But overall, the rate is to be welcomed, and officers are to be applauded for their hard work on it.
Thank you, Patrick. Councillor Taylor.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Chair, listen, I don't think any party or indeed any elected representative within this chamber, you know, finds ourselves, you know, in a situation where, you know, we believe that an increase in rates is the most desirable situation that we want to be in, you know, particularly given the ongoing financial difficulties that are faced by many households, you know, across the district, you know, particularly as a consequence of COVID. But, you know, certainly, you know, we're in a position where we will be supporting of the rates increase tonight. There has been a lot of work undertaken by senior management, by representatives to achieve this level, and a lot of hard and difficult decisions that were made to get us as low as we could, you know, and that's what's obviously been presented tonight. You know, we will continue to face financial challenges over the coming years as a council. And, you know, particularly as a consequence of the impact of, you know, COVID on our organisation, and we must strive, you know, to ensure that our ratepayers have been provided with the value for money through the services that they receive, you know, from council. You know, as we have embarked upon the rates process, we've faced the dilemma of ensuring that the rates were kept at the lowest possible level on one hand, whilst also ensuring that our current levels of services were protected and indeed improved. And we also have strategic priorities that we are currently developing and hope we can bring them to fruition that will hopefully protect and indeed encourage much needed investment across the district. Our party remains committed to remaining to keeping the rates at the lowest level possible, and, you know, certainly we'll continue to strive to ensure that ratepayers get the best value for money from our council services. But, you know, I just want to conclude by saying, you know, there's a deep, you know, sense of gratitude to the senior management team in particular. You know, we've had our strategic, you know, meetings, strategic finance working group meetings on a regular basis over the last number of months. But there has also been engagement, you know, one-to-one engagement and engagement with parties, you know, to allow us to achieve this level that's, you know, presented to us tonight. So thanks to everybody that has been involved in that process. It's involved, you know, a lot of people, particularly the senior management team, finance officials and the elected representatives that regularly contributed to that financial working group. So it's you know, I think we've got, you know, a decent result there with the proposed increase. It's not desirable, as I've already said, but I think we've got ourselves in the best possible position without compromising the services that we provide to our ratepayers. So thanks to everybody involved in that. Thank you.
Thank you, David. So I think everybody who's indicated they want to speak have spoken, and we propose from Councillor Clark, seconded by Councillor Walker, that we approve the items in striking the rates. So if everybody's in agreement, then we can move on. I suppose just as Chair, to add my thanks to the senior management team and all the staff been involved in this process. They've worked tirelessly, and it's been very much praised, and thank you. Okay, so we move on to the next item of business, which is the action sheet. So if we go through the action sheet for accuracy, there's seven pages. So page one, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, and page 7. Can I get a proposer and a seconder for accuracy? Proposed by Councillor Owen. Thank you, Catherine. And seconded by Councillor Hyle. Thank you. Okay, any matters arising? Okay, if we move on then to item number five. So items 5, 6, and 7 would be minutes of previous council meetings. Under Standing Order 13.1, they're actually only here for accuracy, so there's no matters arising under these items. So if we take item number 5 first of all, which is the council meeting from the 1st of February, if we go through it for accuracy, and we've got 15 pages, so bear with me. Page 1, page 2, page 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15. And in terms of accuracy, we've got a proposal from Councillor Stokes and seconded by Councillor Andrews. If we can then move on to item number 6, which is the Minister's Special Council meeting held on the 25th of January. So 4 pages for accuracy. Page 1, page 2, page 3, and page 4. Do we have a proposer? Proposer, Councillor Andrews, and seconded by Councillor McGuinness. Thank you. If we can move on then to item number 7, it's a special council meeting on the 17th of February. We've got 3 pages for accuracy. Page 1, page 2, and page 3. Do we have a proposer and a seconder? Proposer, Councillor Sharvin, thank you. And seconded by Councillor Mason, thank you, Cathy. Okay. If we move on then to item number 8, which is the ERT minute from the 8th of February. So if we go through, first of all, for accuracy, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and 10. And under accuracy, we've got Councillor Stokes proposing and seconded by Councillor Burgess. That's correct? Yep. Yeah. Okay, and then if we get matters arising, I think Councillor Owen, you're in first there.
Thanks very much, Chair. I'm just wondering there, on page 3, there was the FFNI operational costs. We are having the rollout, the start of the rollout for the hyperfast broadband. So I see that it's actually mentioned there, and that there, I'm not going to go into finer details, but that that it was discussed about in those particular minutes. Something that Councillor Walker and I are having is real big trouble, particularly in Killaloe. And like I say, it's the rollout of this hyperfast. I'm wondering if I can make a proposal and ask just to add on to that particular item, if it would be possible to have a special council meeting with maybe Fibris in attendance or any other network internet providers. So I'm just wanting to put that out there. If anybody would mind, that would be great. Thanks very much.
Thank you for that, Catherine. I think quite recently, were Fibris at a meeting with us relatively recently? Are they due to come? Maybe I can bring in, is Connor available on the call?
Yeah. Yes, Chair, I can maybe come in on that if you don't mind.
Thank you.
Yeah, the FFNI project has just been awarded. The Stratum project that you talk about is the one that's been rolled out at the minute and will be rolling out across the district over the coming months. I intend, once we have Fibris on board with the FFNI, to call a workshop with councillors and invite Fibris to that workshop where the proposals over the next 2-3 years in the rollout of the hyper and full fibre broadband network across the district can be discussed with the provider.
Thank you, Connor. So that was proposed from Catherine. Do we need a seconder for that then, or is that something that...
I second.
Yes. Yeah. Catherine, are you content that's a workshop as opposed to a special council meeting?
I would prefer a special council meeting. Like I say, the reason being is what I'm worried about is for the sake of all of the other councillors right across the district. We are just the start of this. Killaloe has just been the start of it, and it has absolutely been a disaster. The amount of complaints, you know, Billy and I are getting is enormous. I wouldn't want this to happen to anybody else and any other councillor having to go through this. And we are pathfinding here in Killaloe. So it's more trying to be a preventative thing for the benefit of all of the other councillors right across the district.
The working group, and as long as all councillors are invited to it, that suffice, Catherine.
I would really prefer a special council meeting, but yeah, working group's fine.
Okay, and then seconded by Councillor Walker. Okay, thank you for that. Now, there's been a few comments on that. I think Councillor Andrews, you looking in next there?
Oh, thanks very much, Chair. First, I do concur with Councillor Owen, and as myself as a Rhode Island councillor, I've been getting a lot of representations about the standard of broadband, and especially in recent times. So I'm only too happy that we do have a working group set up to discuss this further and to liaise with the providers. So I support Councillor Owen's call. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Terry. Councillor Walker.
Yes, Chair, and I'll say I have second that there. Councillor Owen is right. It has been a disaster from day one, Rowan, not just Killyleagh, but parts of Ballinahinch as well. And I think this is an opportunity to put our concerns across to utility companies such as Fibrous, in that because, for example, one issue in Killyleagh, they had knocked all BT lines off for 26 hours. Doctor surgery couldn't even operate because they couldn't get into their computers. And that I actually have got the residents who had signed up to them 2 months' grace in paying their bills because of the damage they were doing in the area. A lot of people wanted to leave them. They were refusing to let them leave. So I think this is the perfect opportunity for us to ask some pertinent questions of this company and why they're causing so much havoc right throughout the area. And as Councillor Owen has said, you know, this will forewarn councillors from other areas as to when they come to your town or village, expect to have problems in that. Now, their excuse was that too many people come onto the system at once and it crashed. That doesn't wash with me. You know, they were destroying BT lines and everything that was there. My local paper actually covered it before Christmas for myself in relation to it and that. But I think this is the perfect opportunity to deal with it. And I'm happy with a working group providing all the councillors are invited along to it.
Perfect, Billy. Thank you. We'll obviously get that arranged. Okay. Councillor McAteer, is your item a separate item?
No, Chair, it was actually on that because I think it was myself actually asked the ERT meeting that we would ask the Stratagem or Fibres to come along and explain exactly what they're at. I think maybe what Councillor Owen's talking about maybe slightly different. I mean, that's a practical issue in particular DEA. I think what, I know certainly my idea in inviting along was to dig down into actually what actually they are providing, how they're providing it, how that is cross-referenced with OpenReach, and exactly what are they providing that's new, and that's the thrust that I was trying to get involved in, and I wanted answers for it, because the more I hear of actually what's going on, having spoken to people in OpenReach recently about broadband coverage, it does concern me a little bit about the approach and all this. I'm not talking about the mess and get on that's in the delivery of it. I'm just talking about the very going to the very core of it and how actually they're spending government money and what they're going to be providing us. I'm quite worried about it actually. So a meeting that I think needs to address those matters as opposed to the practicalities possibly of street to street or road to road issues on the insertion of the fibre optics cables themselves, you know.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. We'll maybe see them at that working group meeting. The first half could be to deal with the overview, and then the second half could be the operational delivery items as such, and that way then
we can... Yeah, but it's, you get lost in the whole thing, you know.
Okay, Jack, thank you. Okay, if we're moving on then, is any other matters arising on the same minute? Or are we content to move on? Okay, if we can move on to the Minister's SPNR Committee on the 11th of February, if we can go through them for accuracy. Page 1... Page 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and 11. I think we have a P there from Councillor Sharvin proposing. Do we have a seconder for accuracy before we go to Matters Horizon? Seconder from Councillor O'Mara, thank you. If we go back to Matters Horizon then, Councillor Hanlon.
Yes, thanks, Chair. It's just on item number 31, I think, on page, not sure which page it is, to be honest, but it's just in regards to the proposal from Councillor Sharvin and myself at SBNR to write to the Trust, highlighting the concerns outlining, you know, that arose from the judicial review information we were provided with. I would just like to make a proposal on the back of the health working group that met last week, that we would write to Minister Swan and request that he meets with the delegation in regards to the Down Hospital and what the future of the hospital will be from his perspective. I also would suggest we write to the Health Committee at Stormont to discuss the same. Obviously, we know COVID has severely impacted the hospital services, but as we look at the COVID recovery and look at the pathways that we are going to come out of it and the vaccine rollout, etc., I think the residents of the town and further afield, they really need some assurances as to what it's going to look like in terms of the hospital facilities.
Thank you for that, Una. I'm just looking at the instant chat there. We've got a seconder from Councillor Brown, is that correct?
Yes, indeed. Happy to.
Okay, is everybody in agreement with that proposal? Okay, that's Dean Carey then. Thank you, Una. If we can move on then, the next, I think Councillor Savage, you were in next for the question.
Yes, Chair. It was really in relation to page two, in relation to the letter to the Health Minister and the communication with the PHA in relation to the testing sites. But I want to move on to potentially suggest that obviously with the announcement that the SSE Arena in Belfast has been looked at a potential mass vaccination hub for the greater Belfast area, I would like to propose that we as a council write to the Health Minister and the PHA offering both the Newry Leisure Centre and the Down Leisure Centre as potential mass vaccination centres. When we do get to the stage where the provision and the supply of vaccines is at a level where we can roll it out on a fast at a fast pace. I know that there have been facilities given to individual GP practices, etc., and that's worked very effectively to get certain sectors vaccinated. But I'm led to believe that the local rural voluntary transport networks are at sort of capacity at the moment in relation to meeting demand to get some of our vulnerable and elderly people and maybe not so elderly people to vaccination centres. And I believe as the supply increases, which we're led to believe it will as we come into the spring, and in a bid to try and get as many of our people across all age groups vaccinated as soon as possible, I would suggest that we as a council make two of our landmark buildings at both ends of the district available for vaccination. And I would ask that we write to the Health Minister and to the Public Health Authority, offering those sites so that they can be factored in to any mass vaccination programme. We have a very rural district. We have a lot of people have to come from both ends. I think having people to travel for mass vaccination to Craigavon from the likes of Kilkeel, Addycall, and also South Armagh is a big ask. And I think that, and also going out as far as Arglass, Strangford, going away to Belfast, etc., is a big ask as well. And that's why I would ask that we write to the Health Minister and to the PHA and offer our two sites as part of the rollout to ensure that we get as many of our people vaccinated within our district as possible. And we do it in a way that is amenable to them and doesn't, as usual, put the connection with health being associated with having to find transport. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you for that, Michael. I see an S in from Councillor Andrews. Terry, you're content to second that proposal?
Yes, Chair. I concur wholeheartedly with Michael on his proposal. I know on previous occasions I did raise about the likes of Down Leisure Centre, Newcastle, etc., being rolled out, you know, for vaccinations, etc., and for testing. But I think it's a very good proposal, and especially in the times that we're in with the vaccination programme getting rolled out, I think that would be a great opportunity for additional centres to be made available so that we can cater for the additional vaccines. And I see there's today it was announced that the vaccine program has been extended to 60 to 64-year-olds. And again, that's another welcome step in the vaccination rollout program. So again, I'm only too happy to second Councillor Savage's proposal, which I think, in light of the vaccination program and how well it's doing so far, that it would be another step in the right direction to get everybody vaccinated. So thank you very much, Chair, for your indulgence.
Thank you, Terry. Okay. Are there any other matters arising under the SPNR minute? Are we content to move on with that one? Okay. If we can move on to the AHC committee, dated the 15th of February, and again, we'll go through them page by page for accuracy. Page 1, page 2, page 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. We have the minute proposed by Councillor O'Meara and seconded by Councillor Andrews. Have we any matters arising? Yep, Councillor Sharvin.
Yeah, Chair, thank you. It's in relation to the financial funds, capital financial funds. It's just for surety for those that were closing today. I understand from grant applicants that there are some technical issues in submitting their grant forms. I want assurities from the staff that any that were late today due to the technical issues will be accepted. And if the deadline had been extended, that all applicants were made aware of such. I know there were some issues earlier on this morning where applicants couldn't get online to submit their grant forms.
Thank you, Gareth. Dorina, are you content to come in there?
Sorry, Chair, it's probably Michael Lipsett, actually.
I'm giving you another director because you haven't got enough to be doing, Dorina. I'm giving you two of them. Apologies, Michael. Can you come in on that matter there?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm aware there were some technical issues today. I can confirm that anything that came in late today will be accepted. In terms of extending the deadline, we need to see how that pans out over the next day or so. I understand the issue should be resolved at this point, but if we still have problems tomorrow, then we'll extend it and we'll make sure that everybody's written through.
All right. Brilliant. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. Councillor Taylor?
Yes, Chair, thanks. It's on that point, actually. I had someone who had tried to submit an application actually from early this morning, and we got that, obviously, commitment that the deadline will be extended to 5 p.m. I'm told I got a call from her just after 5 p.m. to say that she continued to have problems this evening and wasn't actually able to submit it. It wouldn't accept it. Now, I did ask her to email the programmes unit to advise of the problem, so... You know, welcome the commitment that there will be some, you know, lenience shown in that regard, because it's clear that there was major issues with the system today. So, you know, I welcome that commitment that the officials have given here now to allow that bit of leeway. So thanks very much.
Thank you, David. Councillor Enright.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would say to Michael, the new system is a welcome development. We waited for many years, but there are definitely snags within it. I mean, last week I had issues where I couldn't attach a child welfare or child safety policy at the same time as attaching a constitution. I had similar issues today where it would force you to attach a document that wasn't required to be attached, and then you wouldn't be able to attach, say, something you needed to attach, like the annual accounts. So I think it's actually a very good system when all the bugs are teased out, and it will save a lot of time from massive duplicating and copying and photocopying that we always had to do for these grant applications. But, I mean, I struggled with one that this afternoon for 3 or 4 hours and still couldn't get it across the line. I was able to get a PDF document out of it, but not actually get it submitted. So I actually spoke to the program unit just after 5 o'clock about it. They weren't sure if it could be accepted or not. But I really feel that another 24 or 48 hours would be worthy, because I'm pretty computer literate, and if I wasn't able to make it work, and if I were able to identify several bugs which I was able to phone up and tell the program unit about and they were able to verify whilst I was on the phone, then other people will have had the same problems. So I really feel that in view of the fact it's the first live trial of a new and welcome software, I think it would be no harm to leave the program open till Friday, and just to ensure that anyone who does need to upload things has been able to upload them with the appropriate attachments. So I'd like that to be considered, please.
Okay, thank you, Cadogan. Can I leave that with you, Michael, if that's okay, that one?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah.
Okay, so no other matters arise. Before we move on to the next, I suppose just as Chair of Council, it's my pleasure to obviously welcome the £180,000 upgrade for Downs Road Play Park in Newcastle. I suppose we know how well used that play park is, and it's just a massive facility, not only for locals, but also for our tourism products. It's lovely to see that obviously ratified and approved tonight. Okay, if we can move on then to the next minutes, which are Neighbourhood Services from the 17th of February. So again, we'll go through for accuracy. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and 11 have been proposed by Councillor McKeever. Thank you, Karen. Seconded by Councillor Mason. Have we any matters arising? Yep, Councillor McAteer.
Chair, on page 4, I know there's you talk about the review of the council bus shelter policy, and TransLink have been alluded to, and I think there was talk about writing to TransLink and asking them for an update on their ability to be able to deliver bus shelters that they have identified. I know I've been on the case for a bus shelter in Bourne since November 2018 in conjunction with the council, but eventually I think in early 19 had an application succeeded actually in determining that it was indeed eligible. But since that, it's been very, 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 very slow. It goes from, you know, then going to a kind of a conference where they decide all the bus shelters for Northern Ireland, and apparently there's 180 has been approved sometime early last year. But to date, there's been nothing, and it seems every time you look for an update, they come back with the same thing. They're still applying for funding, and it seems to be all over the place. So, like, I concur with other councillors' concerns that, you know, people out on the ground have been asking, you know, to provide bus shelters between us or TransLink, and, you know, I think maybe we're the only ones able to operate, but certainly I would love to see a better follow-up with TransLink to try and push them on to make a decision, are they going to fund these or not this year, you know? Because it's just gone on far too long, and the public out there are asking us what we're doing about it, you know? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor McAteer. We've got some action from that committee, so whenever that report comes back, hopefully then we can see what the response is from TransLink and the time constraints attached to that. Okay. Do we have any other matters arise under that minute? Are we content to move on? Okay. If we can move on into item 12, there was nothing referred from the planning section this month. Then under correspondence, we have items 13 and 14, which is the Housing Council Bulletin and the Housing Council Minutes, which are generally just for noting as such. Okay. If we can move on then to item number 15, is the Boundary Commission review. I know it would be standard that parties would respond to that as such. Michael, is your question regarding item number 15? Sorry, Councillor Savage, is your regarding item number?
Hi, Chair. I had a glitch with the computer there. It's item number 14.
And actually, yeah, I'm sorry, I've seen in the chat there, you weren't up, that's what you're underneath item 13 and 14. Yep, that's fine, go on ahead.
Yeah, Chair, it's in relation to the Housing Council. I just want to comment on welcoming the next 50 years presentation that appears to have been done and seen it in the minutes there. As you know, this week marks 50 years since the legislation that was passed to form the Northern Ireland Housing Executive. And it's great to see in the future planning that there's a serious effort to sort of give a more dynamic role to the Housing Executive in the decade or so ahead by giving it potential powers to borrow in a mutual way. And Chair, it's just, you know, at a time when we're constantly getting figures put to us every day and numbers to us every day, we're nearly immune to seeing shocking figures. But there are two numbers that we as a council really need to bear in mind, and those numbers are 3,309. That's the amount of families or individuals on the housing list in this district. And the other number is 2641, 2641, which is the number of families or individuals who are in housing stress. And I know we are immune to those sort of startling figures coming, but those truly are startling. And, you know, another figure is that we need approximately 1,800 new builds to meet demand in this district. And Chair, I think it's, you know, what we're looking at the moment here, we're probably outside of Belfast and Derry, the area that needs the most work, the most attention and the most dynamism and thinking outside the box to deal with what is a real housing crisis in our district. And that's why, Chair, you know, I welcome the changes that are coming, but I think that the timing of this is perfect in relation to where we are heading in relation to our forthcoming second housing needs conference or symposium, in that I believe a lot of what's been discussed at the moment within the housing sector is in the melting pot, and we need to tap into that and shape a very good conference that has real tangible outworkings and actions that we can take forward as a district and have a sort of collaboration at all levels to deal with what is a very much growing problem. The one thing that's remained constant in the last 50 years, while a lot of things have changed for the better with the housing executive, the one thing that remains constant in the greater Down and greater Newry areas are waiting lists. And I think it's no longer acceptable that we should be putting up with those as very much part of our life here in this district. We have a right to have our people housed in decent housing and decent accommodation. And I believe we really need to hammer that home at our conference in the autumn. And I just really want to get an update from Connor, if possible, on how that's progressing, and are we getting buy-in from a lot of the stakeholders at this stage, and are we looking potentially at an autumn conference, if that's feasible, given the backdrop that we have of the pandemic. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. I bring Connor in to answer that question. Michael, can you turn on your microphone or your camera as well, if that's possible? Yep, go on ahead there, Connor.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I've met with community planning staff last week, and we have put together a sort of a plan on how we will deliver out on the proposed housing symposium later on this year, either late summer or early autumn. And that group is starting to put together a sort of an agenda and a proposal, and we'll be working through that in the coming months.
Okay, thanks, Connor. Thank you, and thanks for your efforts in that. Thank you.
Happy enough, Michael. Okay, no problem. We're going to move on then. Number 15 we were on. I see that Councillor Murphy, you had a question. Now, was that relating to item number 15?
Yes, Nora, thanks. Thanks for this opportunity. Yeah, it's obviously in relation to the local government boundary review. And I know, as you said, you know, parties will have an opportunity just to, you know, make any proposals and submit their views. But I think it'd be very remiss of this council to miss the opportunity, because it does include the possibility of taking a look at council names. And like, obviously coming from South Armagh, the name Uri Mourne and Down, and I know an awful lot of people in this area would concur with this position, that it doesn't seem that inclusive of a significant part of the district. You know, so I think it is an opportunity for us to take a fresh look at the name of the council. You know, so if it's possible, through whatever mechanism is available to us, that we could do that. And, you know, just, you know, at least give the perception to all the citizens that this council is inclusive of everybody in every area. You know, so I propose that we do take a fresh look, use this opportunity to do this. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you. Declan, do you have a seconder for that? Yep, Councillor O'Mara. Okay, no problem. We'll leave that then with the officers to take a look. Okay, no bother. If we can move on then, Councillor McAteer, did you want it under the same item?
It is actually, yeah, funny, my attention was drawn to it as well. I mean, bearing in mind the angst we've gone through even recently in working the outworkings of the previous amalgamations and any tinkering with the integrity of the council area. I mean, I would be concerned about this and the impact this is liable to have. You know, if too much time got around it, there was a radical change in local government quite a number of years, back in 2014-15, and the impact of that is we're only recovering from it now, and I think any tinkering around the edges of our council area certainly should be viewed with some alarm, you know, and I do think we would need to we need to be very careful about this, and you know, have a corporate review on it, and put a submission in to that effect as well. I know certainly they do hold obviously after proposals, but sometimes that's a bit late. Then you're trying to change the unchangeable, you know. But just bear in mind what we've gone through recently. I think it's worthy of some recognition. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks for that, Declan. We'll get officers to take a look at that and then come back to us. Okay, if we can then move on to item number 16, that was an item across buttons from the Minister for Infrastructure. It was a matter for noting. And then if we can move on to item number 17, there's correspondence from the Assembly about the Protection from Stalking Bill. I think, again, probably parties respond to that, if possible. Oh, have you got a question on that one, Councillor Murphy? Or was that the last one?
Obviously, I welcome, you know, the fact that this bill is going through the Assembly. And I know that the party, Sinn Féin, has already made its own recommendations. And we're happy that that they have been included, you know, in the bill. But, you know, it is the view that it still should, the bill itself, you know, and maybe this is something that could come from the council, because obviously when it goes through the various stages, there is an opportunity for people to either water down the clauses within the bill or otherwise, you know, and I think the view should be that we ensure that the bill in its current form, that it remains intact, you know, so I propose that, you know, from this council, you know, if people have read the bill and they're happy enough with it, that should be our position. That, you know, because it's a very, very important piece of, well, will be a very important piece of legislation once it passes through. You know, obviously, for the first time, you know, victims of this type of stalking, you know, will certainly have, you know, redress to the law. And, you know, this will be an offence. And, you know, there will be penalties as well. But it's important, you know, because unfortunately I've seen it too many times, that legislation, when people get their hands on it, it does become, you know, not exactly what people had intended in the first place. So maybe, you know, if people feel inclined are happy enough with that proposal, that somebody will second it. Thank you.
Thanks, Declan. So essentially a proposal for a corporate response to go back to the stalking bill from the council. Okay, do we have a seconder for that proposal? Councillor McGuinness, thank you. Una. Okay, if we leave that with officers then to link back in. Okay, thank you. If we can move on then to number 18, which is the Housing Council Conference, speaking whether we want to send anybody and have some nominations for that. Would any members like to attend that conference?
Chair, can I propose Councillor Michael Savage?
Thank you, Pete. Okay. Councillor Murphy?
Yeah, I would propose myself, if that's okay, to attend as well, yeah.
Okay. Councillor Andrew seconded that. Okay, we're content with two members then. Okay, thank you. If we can move on then to our notices of motion for this evening. And the first notice of motion on the agenda, you'll see, was actually removed. And I know it was actually, I think, was discussed at the Brexit working group this afternoon. So the first one we're looking at this evening is item number 20, which is a notice of motion from Councillor Clark about the COVID disruption payment for all students. You'll have been circulated on Thursday or Friday with the list of motions that we're going to hear this evening. So this is one of the ones we are actually going to hear. So can I hand over to you, Councillor Clark?
That's great. Thanks very much, Chairperson. I would just like to make a small amendment. It's on the second line where it calls on the Minister for the Economy. The amendment I'd like to put in is rights to the Minister of the Economy. Just for the accuracy. Okay, sir?
Yep, well, no problem at all. Go on ahead.
Yep. Thanks, Chair. I read the motion then, that this council welcomes the recent announcement of a £500 COVID disruption payment for students studying full-time higher education courses, notes the exclusion of full-time students studying further education courses and students studying higher education courses in the south of Ireland or in Britain is unfair, acknowledges the difficulty of part-time students facing financial hardship, also needs to be addressed, and calls on the Minister for the Economy to address the inequalities and ensure that all students who are currently excluded from the COVID disruption payment receive the £500 payment. So speaking briefly to the motion, Chairperson, I just think it's cruel that so many students have not received this payment, to exclude students who are studying in Britain and in the south of Ireland, citizens of our area being excluded, which is a token amount. A £500 is a token amount, but it would be very well received, and it would be a great gesture that we are, as political parties, because at the end of the day, it's the political parties, it's up and storming, so the political parties are listening to the students, and I think that's very important for democracy, and encouraging young people to get involved in politics. If we're listening to young people and students, they're more likely to get involved in the process. So I think it's even worthwhile from that point of view. All students need the same support, and indeed there's extra cost in regards to when you're studying in the likes of Wales and England. I have a nephew in Liverpool, so I know firsthand the difficulties they face. Traveling and their traveling costs before COVID, but in regards to the problems they're facing, also they've lost their jobs as well, and when they returned home, they also couldn't find employment either. So you've got hard pressed families, who are going through the disruption of COVID. And we all know it, we're all going through it. But on top of that, then the students who, haven't got resources, and we all know, they'd eat you out of house and home. So, there's real pressures on the family there also. They've also had there's been a major impact on their student life. Obviously, socializing is a big part of the student life, meeting new people and that. But also even in the educational aspect, that's also been diluted as well, and they're not getting the full value that they paid their courses for. The motion's just calling, but it's now writing to the minister to get the money out the door, to get a package together and do everything as possible to get the payments made to all students. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Willie. And Councillor Walker?
Chair, thank you very much. And the DUP will also be supporting this motion, but if Councillor Clark would maybe take a small amendment in it, that when we're writing to the Minister, I would make a proposal, hopefully he'll accept it, that we write also to the Executive. Because while the Minister maybe want to take the decision on it, I think she will have to talk to the Finance Minister to get the finance for this. And I do know of students, because I've been on to Peter Weir, MLA in Strangford. There's four students in Killeley, a couple in England and a couple in Wales who are having the same problems. I have correspondence from the Minister. The Minister is saying at the minute that because students have signed up to other universities outside Northern Ireland, it's not within her remit, but she has been in contact with the regional assemblies in Wales and Scotland and also Westminster. So she is well aware of it. So she is, and she's progressing that there, hopefully with the right outcome, because I think it's wrong that students are having to come home and that they're still having to pay for their accommodation and that, irrespective of their England, Scotland, Wales, the Republic of Ireland and that, and I think they should be getting the 500, so they should. Now, I hope Councillor Clark maybe accepts that small amendment, because whenever my colleague there just over a month ago had brought the motion in relation to the health minister and the £500 for health workers. We accepted it and changed our motion to write to the executive. So I hope collectively, you know, we do write to the executive. Yes, by all means, send a letter to the minister in relation to this, but also a letter to the executive. But we totally support this motion.
Thank you. Billy, Councillor Walker, are you content to, or Councillor Walker, Councillor Carr, are you content to accept Councillor Walker's amendment?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy enough to accept it, but in this particular situation, I'm not sure how relevant it is, because my understanding, the budget is available. You know, the resources are there. So I'm not sure what the executive sign off would, you know, or the executive would have to do. But I'm happy to include it. It keeps Councillor Walker, you know, happy. Sure.
Okay, thank you, Willie. Okay, Councillor Savage.
Councillor Savage, you're on mute.
Chair, can you hear me now? Sorry, I'm having real problems with this computer tonight. Apologies.
Can
you hear me okay?
Yes, can indeed. Go ahead.
Thank you. No, Chair, we're very happy to support the motion. The SDLP, as you know, led the campaign to press for this £500 payment and got great support across the public. With a lot of parents, a lot of students in contact with us over a period of a number of sustained weeks. And, you know, we brought pressure to bear, and we're delighted that the £500 was paid. And as a father of a daughter who's studying in Galway, I'm one of those at the coalface whose daughter is actually feeling the pain of being left out. Really, you know, there's a question has to be asked here, because my understanding is that the economy minister, as Willie has said, has the money to pay this. The money has been allocated. But it appears to be that the identification of students who are studying from Northern Ireland, who are studying in the Republic or in Britain, it's hard for universities to identify them. My question would be, and maybe you could lead to a potential additional amendment if Councillor Clark agrees, surely the easiest mechanism for discovering students based from Northern Ireland who are studying is through the Northern Ireland Student Finance Northern Ireland. Every student applies for their finance, for their fees, etc. So surely that mechanism is available to try and identify those students who are studying either in the south of Ireland or in Britain who are from Northern Ireland, because they apply for, and certainly my daughter did, she applied for the student finance NI for in relation particularly to her fees. So, you know, maybe there's an opportunity in the line that ends in Minister for Economy, when we write to the Minister for Economy, is to asking her to find a mechanism to engage with Student Finance NI to identify all NI students studying in the south of Ireland and Britain, and then continue with to address the inequalities. I believe this is the logjam or the excuse that's been used not to pay, and I think that we should be asking the question. Maybe others who hold that, members of the DUP may be able to clarify that, but my understanding is that the arguments put forward to date are putting it on the onus on the universities to tell them who's studying where and where they're from, whereas I believe the government in Northern Ireland already holds that data, unless there's a GDPR issue with it. But certainly we support the content of the motion, and maybe if members feel that element of an amendment may break the logjam in some way, it may be worth exploring.
Thank you, Michael. Back to you, Councillor Clark. Are you willing to accept that additional amendment as well?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Willie. Yes. Okay, if we move on then, Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we're obviously happy as well to support the motion and the additional amendments that have been put forward tonight as well. This is something certainly my party colleague, John Stewart, MLA, has been working on from the initial announcement that was made regarding the £500 for students here. It's certainly an issue that has come across my table, with, you know, parents and students making contact regarding their concerns about the fact that they haven't been included in this payment scheme. The reality is they're facing the same pressures that students are who are studying here find themselves in. There's tenancy agreements that they're not able to get out of. There's just a general cost as well with any studying, you know, in GB and the Republic, and they certainly find themselves and their families in a difficult position at the minute because of that. And whilst the £500, you know, won't cover all those costs, it's certainly an acknowledgement of the difficulties that they are experiencing as a consequence of the COVID situation. So, you know, anything that we can do, you know, certainly to encourage the minister to get this over the line, I think we should do that. And, you know, and hope, you know, with the, you know, the details of this proposal and certainly the amendments and the suggestions to try and overcome some of those issues, particularly Michael's regarding the student financing a, you know, proposal. You know, certainly I think we can find a way around this, and I hope the minister will do everything she can to ensure that this is gets over the line, because it's required really, because the students are in a very difficult situation. I've heard the stories firsthand of the problems that they're having. So I think we need to do all that we can. The executive and the economy minister needs to do everything that she can to get this over the line. So more than happy to support this proposal tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Councillor Byrne.
Chair, no, I was in just a second. Happy enough to support the proposal.
Okay, perfect. Councillor McAteer, are you just doing the same, or did you want to speak?
Sorry, just the same, Chair. I didn't want to speak, no.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Well, everybody seems to be in broad agreement. Can I hand back maybe to you to sum up then?
Yes, very quickly. Just like to thank everybody for their support. I'd like to thank the councillors who put forward the amendments. I think it enriches the motion and it makes it a better motion. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. That's great. The motion then is carried. Everybody seems to be in agreement on that. Okay, if we can move on to item number 21, which is the next notice of motion, which is from Councillor O'Meara. Can I hand over to you, Barrett?
Yeah, good morning, Callie. Thanks very much, Chair. So the motion reads, this council, recognising the ongoing plight of the thousands of undocumented Irish living in America, many of whom are from this council region, urges President Biden to prioritise legislation to create a roadmap to citizenship for them and all those classed as undocumented. Chair Gerry O'Hara will be seconding this motion. This motion proposes writing to President Biden, asking him to prioritise legislation to create a roadmap to citizenship for all those classified as undocumented. President Biden has constantly and continues to be a strong supporter of the Irish peace process and defender of the Good Friday Agreement. He has also been unequivocal in his stance on Brexit, warning the Johnson government that any trade deal between Britain and the United States is conditional on the British honouring the Good Friday Agreement. As one who is deeply proud of his Irish roots and who himself is a descendant of Irish emigrants to America, I hope that President Biden will look favourably on the plight of the undocumented Irish in the United States. It is believed that there are as many as 50,000 undocumented Irish people living in the US, hard-working people, taxpayers, homeowners, and contributors to society. This issue impacts on many from this area, irrespective of their creed or class, and it is imperative that all political leaders on this island use their contacts and influence to finally address their nightmare. Since its inception, the United States has offered hope and succour to generations of Irish people fleeing from poverty, famine and repression, many of whom have made considerable contributions to their adopted country. I hope the Biden presidency will look favourably on the plight of the undocumented Irish. I believe that we can look forward with more optimism than we have felt for quite some time on the issue. The Christmas period is an especially difficult time for the undocumented Irish in America. Many people from this area have family members living and working in America who they have not seen because of the restrictions on travel enforced by their undocumented status. It is imperative that the issue of the undocumented Irish in America and all the hardships that go with such status are resolved in a humane manner. The fear of not being allowed to re-enter the US, where many Irish people have made good lives for themselves, has meant that these people have been cut off from their families and their native country. This has caused much hardship for the undocumented Irish and for their families back home. Return visits, holidays, weddings, and even funerals in Ireland are out of the question. It must be remembered that the undocumented Irish worked very hard and made a powerful contribution to American social life and the economy. The Irish in America must have their contribution to the country's society recognised and their status formalised. We in Ireland have a responsibility to argue their case to a successful conclusion. This wrong affects us all. to be many sad and distressed homes in the Newry Morne and Down area at times like Christmas, weddings, funerals and other family gatherings because of the failure to resolve the undocumented issue. The issue of the undocumented Irish remains unresolved. Our families, friends and members of our community are living under the continued threat of being demonised as felons and being deported. Please support this motion, which proposes writing a letter to President Biden asking him to prioritise legislation to create a roadmap to citizenship for them and all those classed as undocumented. This issue is being picked up by the Irish American lobby ever since President Biden was elected, and it's featuring in publications and in newspapers in the Irish communities in America. And the purpose of this motion is to send a strong message to the Irish community in America that Newry Morne and Down District Council stands with them and will do all in our power to try and influence President Biden in whatever way we can. So that's the motion proposed, Chair.
Thank you, Barra. Councillor McAteer, you're in next there.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I know that I've come in there as seconded, but I mean, I'm not going to disrupt Barra's proposal to have Jerry or her seconded. But what I wanted to do really was certainly to welcome the motion and reiterate everything that he has said. President Biden did give an undertaking even prior to his election that it's a matter that he would ensure was brought to both houses. But can I ask, even just to add to this, by means of strengthening the whole thing up, that an amendment would be added to support the E3 visa bill through the US Senate. This bill had actually had gone through the House of Representatives last year, but it's still to go through the Senate. But now with the change of position in both houses, it stands a very strong chance of getting accepted. This bill would grant several thousand two-year renewable working visas to Irish citizens, very unique, and uniquely so. They're available to only those who haven't actually offended any of the immigration laws. So that's a slightly different thing as well. But I think both would certainly enhance the well-being of our Irish citizens in the USA. So I would ask Barry and maybe Jerry to consider adding that on in the best possible interest. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Declan. Barry, did you pick up the point that Declan was making there? Would you be happy to add that to your motion?
Yeah. Look, we'll accept the amendment. Anything that's going to add to the flavour of it. I think it's probably we're seeking legislation to change the status of these citizens to make them citizens of America. But yeah, look, we'll include it in the letter that hopefully will be written up as well. Thanks, Declan.
Okay, thank you, Barra. Thanks, Declan. Councillor Brown, you're in next there.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and certainly agree with the ethos of this motion. Certainly in terms of protecting the rights of undocumented immigrants and settlers to a nation, and I think this would come under the category of Dreamers as well, which is legislation that was brought forward by President Obama, and of course now President Biden would have played a role in. I'm definitely supportive of that in principle. But look, as someone who's a self-confessed American politics nerd and organized people to make calls for Biden from over here when he was running, even I do think this is maybe a little bit of a stretch for Newry Morne and Down District Council. I mean, I brought a motion to invite Joe over to the district, which I think was fine. Look, we've lobbied the executive, we've lobbied the Treasury, we've lobbied, I think, authorities in the Republic of Ireland. But I just think when we're starting to lobby the US government, we're probably getting a little bit outside of the remit of Newry Morne and Down and what our powers are here. And we should be really focusing on things that are closer to hand. But look, I'm happy to support the motion in terms of the ethos of it. And look, if Joe does come over for that pint in Bellini's, maybe we can ask him personally to put this through as a priority.
Thank you, Patrick. Councillor Hannah.
Thank you, Chair. The undocumented, to be quite honest with you, Chair, is an awful position to be in that leaves them very vulnerable, so it is. There's all sorts of implications that there is with us, sir. Anybody that's in this position between medical care, they're always waiting to knock on the door from somebody that would leave them with a massive problem. So the DUP, our position is we'll support the motion, so we will. But the one thing on a pathway to citizenship in any country should always be done through the legal path. To actually go into a country and expect them to work illegally and then be expecting to give them almost a pardon and to be allowed in that way, it's not always the best course. So my perception and the perception of us is that we'll support the motion for those who are there at the moment, but we would encourage anybody going to the United States of America or any country to always use the legal path, not to try to get in through any other methods. So that's my comments, Chair.
Thank you, Glenn. Councillor Taylor.
Chair, thanks. Unfortunately, unlike Councillor Brown, I'm not in first name terms with President Biden, but he obviously has better contacts than I have in that regard, so fair play to him. Listen, we have some concerns about the motion. I'm not, going to try and scupper or anything like that here, because I understand there are genuine concerns about it, but certainly we have concerns about the details of the issue as well. You know, that we're in a situation where the people that are residing in America that are relevant to this issue, they are there illegally. You know, that's the reality of the situation, and there's no way of getting around that. There's also an issue about potentially prioritising one nationality over another. For instance, you know, somebody of Irish nationality descent could be given priority over someone, for instance, potentially fleeing war or poverty. You know, there's an ethical issue about that as well that we have concerns about. And indeed, it's up to the United States themselves. I think what Councillor Brown was saying, you know, we're interfering in immigration policy here, really, in another country. And, you know, they it's within their own destiny to, you know, set them immigration laws and policies. And just as the way it is for ourselves here in the United Kingdom, or indeed the Republic of Ireland or the EU. So there's issues with that as well that we have, you know, problems with. But I do recognise, you know, the contribution that the, you know, Irish American community, many of whom are of an Ulster Scots descent, the contribution that they've offered to America over many, many generations. You know, I have my own cousin who lives in North Carolina, and she has been there for many years now, both her and her husband, and their family's been, you know, has grown up there. So, and they themselves are offering a positive contribution to the development of the country. So, we do have concerns about it. I'm not going to, you know, I think it's important that I did outline them, but I, you know, recognise too that there is a, you know, it is a major issue for many, many people, and it does affect, all, you know, say, numerous people within this district as well. So, that's all I have to say, Chair.
Thank you, David. Councillor O'Hare.
Yes, thanks, Chair. More than happy to support Barr's motion. Myself, I left the north of Ireland in 1985. I was 17 years in America. 10 of them years I was undocumented before I got my green card and citizenship. Undocumented means you don't exist unless you're in your own area, which I mean the Irish area. What I mean by you don't exist is you can't get a bank account. You can't get a driver's license, social security number, medical insurance, and God forbid if you had to go to hospital, you have to give wrong addresses, wrong names. It's just a nightmare, and you're constantly looking over your shoulder. But the hardest part is whenever you can't get home. You can get home, but you'll not get back. I miss my granny, granddad's funerals. I missed aunts, uncles' funerals, Christmases, 10 years. So it's really hard to be undocumented, really, really difficult. And in them cases, whenever somebody dies, it's close to you and you can't go home. The first place you go to is your nearest drinking home, where so many other Irish people are like you, and you spend a day or two there, drown your sorrows, which can bring more problems. So I have first hand of it. It's not a pretty sight to see, not a pretty picture to paint. There is my friends out there, probably for 35 years, and some of them are still undocumented. They're married, they have children, but they can't go home. They cannot go home because they'll not get back again. So, Barra, I would like to see Joe Biden passing this here. Now, I know he has a bit of a problem between the Senate and the House, but he can't be any worse than the last president. So, thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor O'Hara. Councillor Tinley?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and I fully concur with the sentence just expressed there by Councillor O'Hara. I spent 9 years out there as well, chairperson, and four of them as an undocumented person until I got things sorted out. And that was in the mid-90s. And I tell you, it was a lot more welcoming place back then for migrants, as Jerry said, once you were bedded down within your own community. But the federal hostility that permeated through the last 4 years of the previous president there did not exist back then, where you were afraid to go out through the door for fear of arrest. Certainly in the area that I lived, that did not exist. So there's been a whole culture change, certainly in the past 4 years. And I think Councillor O'Meara has touched on it there. This request is for all undocumented to be regularised, and nobody could fail to be touched by the plight of the undocumented who got through at the southern border, where quite literally thousands of children were ripped from their mothers' arms and put in cages. And an absolute shame and disgrace, Chairperson, that it hasn't been given more more prominence on news, on the news agenda. There's 400 to 500 of those children cannot be realigned or reset up with their own parents, because the parents cannot be found and the children are too young to be able to give the authorities the relevant information. So it's an absolute stain on America that was allowed to happen within the past 4 years. So there has been a new administration put in place. I would hope to think and like to think that it's a more sympathetic administration. I know some of my other colleagues there touched on the reality of the situation regarding the undocumented, but it's true to say there's large parts of America would go hungry very, very quickly if the migrants stop coming. It's a country that has been built on migration. It's a country that has always been sympathetic and had great empathy for people from Europe, particularly Irish people, and we're in a very privileged position in that regard. So I too hope that anybody that's there is able to get regularised in short order, and those families that have been separated are able to be reunited very, very quickly, and those 50,000 or so Irish people can start to come back and forward across the Atlantic without fear of being sort of hived off and carved off from their loved ones. So thanks, Barra, for taking that motion, and I fully support the sentiments of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Jarlath, okay, that's everybody who has indicated they wish to speak. Can we hand back to you, Barra, to sum up?
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thanks, everyone, for your contributions to it. I know most councillors were in support. Just how do we giggle there during it, I suppose? Which is more realistic, writing a letter to the President of America or expecting him to come over to Newry for a pint? I don't know, depends. Suppose, listen, the whole meaning of this, and in all sincerity, you want Newry, Mourne and Down District Council to be sending out a message that they're supporting the plight of the undocumented. And in doing so, if the letter sits on the President's table unopened, it'll be picked up by all the media in the Irish-American communities that Newry, Mourne and Down District Council haven't forgotten the plight of the undocumented or are standing with them. So, Gormagadh Cathairlí, thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Barry. I just take it by obviously all the previous speakers, everybody's in agreement with the motions that one there has carried them. If we can move on then to item number 22. It's a notice of motion from Councillor Howell. I understand that Roisin maybe had to pop out. I'm not sure if she's actually back in on the call yet. If not, I can maybe hand over to Councillor Mason, who maybe, if Cathy, if you're content just to read out the motion, advise who's second it, it'll be deferred then to AHC in line with standing orders.
Yes, thanks, Marlene, Chair. The following notice of motion is this council recognises the impact that COVID-19 has had on the mental health and wellbeing of children, young people and families. With this in mind, our DEA forums and coordinators should engage with stakeholders and prioritise allocation of funding for mental health, wellbeing and support initiatives for these affected groups. I was actually supposed to second the motion for Councillor Howell, so if one of my colleagues could second it there.
Yep, that's fine. I see Councillor Hammond has put that in. Cathy, thanks very much. That'll be deferred then to AHC. Okay. So if we move on to the next item, which isn't on the agenda, but it's the motion that was circulated round to yourselves earlier from Councillors Sharvin and Byrne. Obviously, it's a request for an emergency motion which requires the suspension of Standing Order 16.11. I'll maybe hand over to Marie to give a wee overview and then potentially Sarah to do a roll call in terms of the suspension of Standing Order 16.11.
Yeah, Chair, in line with standing orders, just there needs to be an 80% vote in favour of hearing the motion of those present and voting. So Sarah will do, as you know, it's a roll call more just to help us manage the voting just on the system, and then we will just calculate that. Is that okay?
Sorry, Marie, it is actually a recorded vote.
Oh, so apologies, I get that wrong every time, Sarah. Recorded vote, thank you.
Okay. Councillor Andrews?
Four.
Councillor Brown?
Four.
Councillor Burgess is absent. Councillor Byrne?
Four.
Councillor Casey?
Four.
Councillor Clark? Councillor Clark?
Councillor Clark, you're on mute.
Okay, we'll come back. Councillor Kern?
Four.
Councillor Devlin?
Four.
Burns absent. Councillor Enright is absent. Councillor Finnegan?
Four.
Gallagher?
Four.
Councillor Gibbons is absent. Councillor Hanlon?
Four.
Councillor Hannah?
Four.
Councillor Hart?
Four.
Councillor Howell is absent. Councillor Larkin?
Four.
Councillor Lewis is absent. Councillor McGuinness?
Four.
Lone is absent. Councillor Mason?
Four.
Councillor McAteer?
Four.
Councillor McAvoy is absent. Councillor McKee?
Four.
Councillor McKevitt?
Four.
Councillor McMurray?
Four.
Councillor McGree is absent. Councillor Murphy?
Four.
O'Hare?
Four.
Councillor Murray?
Four.
Councillor Owen is absent. Councillor Riley is absent. Councillor Rowan?
Four.
Councillor Savage?
Four.
Councillor Sharvin?
Four.
Councillor Stokes?
Four.
Councillor Taylor?
Four.
Councillor Tinley?
Four.
Councillor Traynor is absent. Councillor Walker?
Four.
Did Councillor Clark come back? We have 28.
Tried to contact Councillor Clark. He looks like he's there, but I can't get him.
Okay, we have 28 for, no against and no abstentions.
Okay, so we're content then. I'll just spend that step in order and then hand over to Councillor Sharvin and Byrne then. Gaz, you want to first read out the motion and speak to it?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you, members, for allowing this emergency motion. The motion is worded and reads as, following the recent announcement by the Bank of Ireland of its proposed closure of the Downpatrick and Cross Midland branches, we as a council are concerned with the detrimental effect that this will have on local jobs, the business and customers in the locality, and urge Bank of Ireland to reconsider and reverse this proposal for the benefit of the people. Chair, today's announcement by the Bank of Ireland is another major loss to the towns of Downpatrick and Cross Madeleine. We continue to see the vital services from banking institutes being stripped away from our high streets, with jobs being lost or moved away. The Bank of Ireland branch in Downpatrick has been a landmark in our town centre for many years and has served the community both personal and business banking needs. The staff have provided first-class service and the branch is so important to the experience of the users. I am disappointed, Chair, that in today's announcement that the bank used figures during the COVID pandemic as a reasoning to close the branches, citing 70% drop in people visiting the branch. This is not due to the move from branch to digital. This is due to the unique environment we all live in today and reduced hours at the branch. I myself make a point of visiting my branch as often as I can, as I know if we don't use it, we lose it. We as a council need to ensure that our high street is protected from the mass exit of banking industries that comes with job losses and financial impact on local businesses through custom of the workers. This closure does not only impact on the customers of the bank, but the surrounding businesses who benefit from the bank being established in the town centre. Our rural areas continue to be a target for closures whenever they need a branch, most importantly, as our broadband network is not fully fit for purpose for all digital platform of banking. Chair, I'd also add that the motion calls for the Council to write to the Chief Executive of the Bank of Ireland raising our concerns, and I believe Councillor Byrne will be seconding it, Chair.
Thank you, Gareth. And actually, I've just skipped ahead of process there. I actually need a proposer and a seconder to suspend that standing order. Can I take Gareth, you as a proposer, and Pete as a seconder? Yep. That's okay.
Yes, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Pete, go on ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thanks to all my fellow councillors for taking the motion as well as an emergency motion. It's a really important issue. And just at the outset, I suppose, not to go over some of the things that Gareth has said in seconding the motion, I'm not naive enough to think that there was no discussion or announcement of closures that were imminent. We all knew over the last couple of months that there were closures discussed across the Bank of Ireland. But it's the sheer scale, speed and timing of these closures I think is quite staggering. And if we go back 10 years, right across the north, if you go back 10 years ago, the Bank of Ireland had 44 branches 10 years ago. So that's 16 closed in the last decade. You take us down to 28 and over 50% of them to be closed in the next 6 months. I believe that that's too fast and too far and will have a massive impact on the communities right across Northern Ireland, but especially my community in Cross Madeleine. 2 or 3 years ago, we pushed out hard on the town status for Cross Madeleine because I firmly believed that as a town that we needed to retain and build on the services that we already have in Cross Madeleine. 5 or 6 years ago, we lost one bank in the Northern Bank. We had two banks in the town and we're down to one bank in the Bank of Ireland. For Cross Madeleine as a town that services South Armagh and the rural hinterland around it, to have no bank is not acceptable. You're asking businesses that have struggled through a pandemic, that are going to come back to trading under heavy restrictions, to then factor in, on the back of Brexit as well, to factor in such a massive change in banking that we would have to travel to Newry, to our nearest branch, and queue up in what would be 2 to 3 times the length of queues, because if you're going to close 15 branches across the north, the other branches are going to be longer queues. I think it's unacceptable. For me, as a local business in the town, I run up and we bank our takings on a Friday in the square in Cross Madeleine. We're expected to take a day off work and go into Newry and go through that rigmarole of trying to bank money in Newry. But the bank and the chief executive, Francesca McDonough, has stated that, you know, the services will be up and running in the post office. Our post office in Cross Madeleine was closed, our large post office was closed a couple of years ago, and our post office was relegated to the back of the centre shop in the main street. While it's a great facility to retain a post office facility in the town, that to double up as our main bank in the town for business banking is completely unacceptable. I agree with Councillor Sharvin with the figures of 60% down from 2017. How on earth can we compare figures from 2017 to the current climate? What is happening here is the Bank of Ireland, and this may sound strong, but I firmly believe that the Bank of Ireland are exploiting the COVID crisis. The mass closures of this magnitude cannot be accepted. Now, I also, you know, colleagues, and I looked at some messages going out in social media and people saying that this is disappointing and we look after the staff or we fight for the staff. I don't think we have to accept that this is a done deal. I don't think we have to accept that over 50% of the banks in the Bank of Ireland in the North have to close. When the chief executive says, but the majority of these banks are branches that have said that have no counter service, they're self-service. That's not the case in Cross and Glen. We have counter service. And we always talk about rural isolation in Cross and Glen. If we remove, further remove services like this, we're only compounding that. The chief executive also talks about a tipping point between online and offline banking, that people have moved in their droves to digital banking. That is not the case in the community of the people that I represent. You come into Cross Midland on any day, and if you want to see the biggest queues, yes, outside the coffee shop in the square, the next is the bank. It services a lot of people around our rural area. And yes, while I accept that some areas may, who some towns that have other banks in their towns may accept the closure of the Bank of Ireland in their area, we certainly can't accept it in Cross Midland. We can't be left with no service or substandard service. So I hope that other councillors will back this motion. I hope that we don't have the defeatist attitude of accepting that this is done and it's all about the bottom line. I understand the Bank of Ireland's annual loss is reported at 650 million. But it's not so long ago that the people of this island bailed out the banks. And we need to have some support from the banking system as well. We have no broadband in certain areas of South Armagh. Try getting a mobile phone reception driving from Camden to Cross Midland, never mind 3G to log on for online banking. It really isn't acceptable. And I think the timing of this, just to finish here, the timing of this at the end of the summer, when we're coming out of the pandemic, is disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful. I think it should be paused. And certainly in Cross Midland, I think it should be reversed. But there should be more dialogue with the people of this area. And I am certainly not going to swallow a load of facts from the chief executives that's trying to ram through and exploit this COVID crisis to close the bank in Cross Glen by her telling me that the people of Cross Glen have moved to online banking largely. It is not right. And it should be opposed by every one of us here in the chamber.
Thank you, Pete. Councillor Finnegan.
Thank you. Look, I'm from the same town as Pete, as I'm sure you know. And look, I have to concur with a lot of that he says. Yeah, it's a huge slap in the face for customers and staff and communities. Just when businesses needed a good boost with one of the hardest years that's on our doorstep, the closure of Bank of Ireland is drawing traders further away from small towns. Customers and businesses having to travel 20 miles or more to the nearest bank. We have absolutely no bank. If this closes, we'll have absolutely no bank in Cross Glen. The elderly and the most vulnerable have been forgotten about and most regretfully, perhaps being most at risk for intrusion due to keeping money at home, you know, by not having any means to get into a bank. There's no question that this pandemic has seen an increase of isolation, anxieties and mental health issues and has highlighted the inequality for us in society as businesses have been forced to go online, while those not technically savvy have been left behind to fend for themselves. This is just another example of big banks assuming that everyone has a computer, has sufficient level of literacy or good level of broadband connection. Working with these people day in and day out in the office, I see firsthand that this is just not the case. Those being left behind, those that have been loyal customers for years on end, are being treated with utter disrespect and disdain. Sinn Féin are planning a national campaign on this, specific to each individual bank closures, led by Pierce Doherty. Look, I'm happy to support this and I welcome the paper. And what I would like to add is just that I can't help but wonder, you know, is there anything more, given that this is what Bank of Ireland seem to do? And just to get our council onto fibre, to be really proactive about getting better connection, if this is the route that we're going down. I certainly hope that that's not the case, and I hope that the campaign, you know, campaigning and everything. But look, thanks for the paper. All right.
Thank you, Aoife. Councillor Hannan, I'm terribly sorry. I seem to have missed your name. There's too many names below you and I've skipped on past you. So apologies. I'll bring you in now.
Yeah,
It's absolutely fine. I was just going to add in that we should write to the executive team of the Bank of Ireland, but I heard Councillor Sharvin adding that into his proposal. I mean, what can I say? This morning's announcement of Bank of Ireland that it's to close over a third of branches in the south and more than half the branches in the north, including my own hometown of Downpatrick. It's really just the wrong decision at the worst possible time. It comes in the teeth of the global pandemic, and it's going to be a huge blow for customers and staff in Downpatrick and the surrounding areas. The Bank of Ireland has attempted to justify this announcement based on a fall in branch visits over the past 12 months, and that's hardly surprising given the entire population at its movements significantly restricted due to a public health emergency. In reality, the bank's using COVID-19 for cover, and it's punishing customers for following public health regulations. And it's not just a cynical move, but it's a slap in the face, and it's going to hurt customer staff and our communities. There's going to be many local businesses and families in Downpatrick left in a very vulnerable position because of this cruel decision. Many of our rural areas, as my colleagues have alluded to, have really bad broadband, really, really poor reception. And elderly and vulnerable customers may not have adequate devices or the knowledge to use them to access online banking facilities. As everybody probably knows, I'm a former bank employee myself, and I recognise the importance of having a branch presence locally. From a customer service perspective, there's a lot of people still like to deal with staff on a one-to-one basis, and it also keeps footfall on our high streets, which benefits the local economy. I do believe that the Bank of Ireland should reverse this decision immediately and commit to a moratorium on branch closures, at least until the end of 2022, but until we see some sort of normality returning as we, you know, work our way out of the COVID pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you. And Councillor Walker.
Thank you very much. And our party will also be supporting the motion and thank the councillors for bringing it. My main concern is that all too often we have banks coming in and using the cover of whatever to close branches. Councillor Byrne's right. They're exploiting COVID. That is a fact, in that we had similar problems a few years ago in Crossgar and Killaloe when the consultations went out and the banks were earmarked for closure, which they subsequently did. And I have to say, and I hope not be negative here, but I think, you know, the decision has been taken, but we need to fight. We need to fight because these consultations at times are only paper exercises to make the banks look good or to make an organisation look good that they've went out to consultation. I'm really concerned about our elderly. Our elderly can't use online banking, so they can't. They genuinely can't. And for a rural community such as Cross MacLean, you know, it's going to be harder there more so than in the Downpatrick area. And that, but I think we need to fight tooth and nail here to say enough's enough, because Councillor Hanlon's right, the footfall that comes in, they go to their banks and that, they then go and they go into other shops and that, so they do, and do shopping. And that generates trade for other shops, cafes, etc. And that, now, my computer was playing up for a second or two there. I did read the motion in that, but I actually think we shouldn't just be writing to them. I don't know where any of the councillors have proposed this. I actually think that the councillors that represent the Cross MacLean Downpatrick area, a meeting should be set up with the chief executive of the Bank of Ireland and put it up to him. Not just in letter, but put it up to him. And there's no point in the 41 councillors coming on. You know, you have the total support, hopefully, of this council. So put it up to him. Should it be a Zoom meeting or whatever? And that, you know, just don't write. Just ask for an urgent meeting with the chief executive and whoever to deal with this. Because, you know, where they're going to stop Is it going to be Ulster Bank next in Downpatrick, like the closed in Killyleagh, you know? And that, and they can't keep using this excuse that the footfall's gone down and that, the footfall's gone down. Maybe we're to blame in a sense that we're, a lot of us is doing online banking, but that should be no excuse. You know, they use the excuse in Killyleagh, but we're transferring a lot of stuff to the post office. You know, you can still go in there and do your banking and that. That's not good enough. Because elderly people that has accounts and that don't want to move. They're happy enough where they are. So they are. So we totally support this motion and thank the councillors for bringing it.
Thank you, Councillor Walker. Councillor Andrews?
Thank you very much, Chair. And first of all, I do agree and support wholeheartedly the sentiments that has been expressed by our proposer and seconder of the motion and the speakers before me. And Enra Wallen, we had a similar situation. We didn't have one, but we had a triple whammy whenever the Northern Bank in Cross Gar closed, the Ulster Bank in Sinfield and in Killyleagh. You know, and we've seen it firsthand in the Wallen, exactly what the role of banks play. They do play a big part in community life, and especially very much in rural settings. You know, they are the heartbeat of the people. You know, and when the banks go, it leaves a large void, which is very hard to fill. You know, as especially as Councillor Walker and others have touched on, you take the bank out of the community goes out of it as well. You know, and then it's like it has a domino effect on local businesses. Like you would have the farming community coming under the banks and doing their business, and then probably going for a fry or doing a bit of shopping or something, and then meeting up with people. You know, and where's the quality proof in all this? Maybe the rural assessments that have been done, and as the previous speakers have touched on, there's large parts of the area that internet's a non-entity and it's non-existent. And how do you expect people who are elderly or who don't have understanding of computers, and most of all with poor broadband, how to do the banks? You know, at the end of the day, for many years, as one of the councillors touched on, it's this community that keeps the banks going. And then in the bailouts, it's at the end of the community practically own the banks and all but name, because they're paying for it through the nose of the day. And they are worrying times ahead, because as I say, whenever we heard recent news in Dublin about the Ulster Bank closing its branches in the Republic, you know, if it's going to start there, you know, it's going to spread right through, that you'll find that in the next 5 or 10 years that the whole banking ethos is going to be a different model to what we've seen today. But, you know, as I say, it's like night following day. It'll be on the agenda. But I think at the end of the day, as councillors, we're 101% behind the people of our community. We send a simple message to the Bank of Ireland and to other banks who may be contemplating drawing back on service provision and by trying to load it all onto the internet, keep your hands off our bank. And as I say, we're united as a community to prevent further bank closures. So I do support the ethos. It's a very good motion and an issue that affects everybody. There's without shadow of a doubt, everybody's behind you 100%. But thanks for listening.
Thank you, Terry. Councillor Taylor?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm fully behind the motion. One of the banks, obviously Cross MacLean, is situated in my district electoral area, and you know, I have concerns about the impact that has on that local community. There was an indication that announcement was imminent, obviously, regarding potential closures, but I have to say I was shocked to see the level of closures that were announced today. It's very concerning, and I think we're seeing, you know, a situation where vital services have been stripped from communities once again, and it's a result of a policy decision of centralisation rather than what's actually best for customer service. Customer needs certainly aren't been put first with regards to the decision that has been made. And whilst there is pounds affected by this, it once again shows the disregard that banking institutions have for rural communities. This is obviously isn't the first bank that is proposed to be closed within the South Armagh area. You know, a number of years ago, the Ulster Bank, for instance, in Newton Hamilton was removed as well. And whilst there was a limited service, you know, to replace that, it certainly wasn't the service that was there before. And we see, and it's not just banking institutions, but just generally, you know, rural communities are always hit hardest by a lot of these decisions, and it is going to be a severe impact for anybody in Cross MacLean and other areas affected to have to travel so many, you know, so long distances to go to the bank. I use online services, but I also use the bank as well. There's instances where you just have to use the bank, you know, an online provision that just isn't the best way of using it, you know, whether it depends on what you're doing. And, you know, I am genuinely worried about the impact of this, you know, on the community, on businesses, you know, the staff themselves, obviously, but the impact generally that it has on the wider community is very concerning. I would say too, you know, I don't think anybody has been defeatist, you know, regarding this. But what I would say is, to overcome the decision that has been made, it is going to be a significant challenge on our part to get these decisions changed. And I think in doing so, we have to be fully prepared. You know, we have to have a strong argument in place. To put, you know, to press the banks to ask them to review this decision. And it's not enough to put a statement out, and it's not enough to say we're very concerned, etc., and we are disappointed. I've outlined my own disappointment on it, but we need to have, you know, clear facts and figures to counter this argument, or that to counter the decision that has been made by the bank. And it's not enough just to go to a meeting and pour our hearts out about it. That's not going to be enough, because the banks will politely listen to us and proceed on with the decisions that they've announced today. So we need to ensure, and I support the proposal for a meeting to go ahead involving councillors from Downpatrick and Sligo regarding this decision. But if that meeting takes place, you know, as well as the representations we'll make as elected representatives on the party level, we need to make sure that we have a good strong argument in place, and certainly if the officials could help us with that in drawing up those, you know, those issues, you know, that we want to address with the banks, you know, I think we should do that going forward. But, you know, we just have to make sure that we're prepared to put the fight in as required to overturn this decision. So fully behind the proposal, I'm sure everybody is tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, David. And apologies, Gareth, I was to go back to you and check if you were content with Councillor Walker's amendment about requesting a meeting with the Bank of Ireland.
Yeah, Chair, as part of writing to the Chief Executive, if we can include our request to meet with the delegation then from the Downpatrick and Sligo DA councillors, more than happy.
Perfect. But one more councillor, and I'll come back to you to sum up. Councillor Brian, you're in next there.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'm more than happy to support the motion, like all the other councillors have gone before me. I think this really sort of underlines the way that banks, commercial banks in particular, are going, unfortunately. And the fact of the matter is that they will always put their bottom line and their shareholders ahead of the interests and of communities. At a cursory glance at the Bank of Ireland share price there a few moments ago, and I see it is up a few percentage points today. So obviously someone is doing okay out of this announcement. I think it really shows the need to invest in alternatives to commercial banking, and that's why I brought a motion last month on the Northern Mutual Bank, which I'm glad that councillors did support in principle, that we would investigate further, because I really think we do need to try and support and invest banks that will actually put communities first. And another thing that we need to do, and hopefully this will be part of the executive's roadmap whenever it's published, is invest in digital skills and try and bridge that digital divide as well, to make sure that where services are withdrawn, and obviously we'll do all we can to stop that happening, but where they are withdrawn, we have to make sure that our local communities are prepared to use the online services that take their place wherever possible. But thank you to the proposers of the motion for bringing this, and has my full support.
Thank you, Patrick. Okay, I'll hand back to you then, Gareth, to sum up.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you to everyone that spoke. And I just want to touch on, you know, around particularly the seems to be the criteria that they're using for the branches being proposed, where they're having 70% drop in visits. If we actually did that across all of our economy and businesses, none of them would be open in the last 12 months, because all of their usage and their number of shoppers have dramatically increased. To Councillor Walker's point, we do need to show that we're fighting and come out strong on this, because if we were not to fight this, other banks may look at it as an easy target to close their own branches right across our district. And I think for any future banks that think of closing any branches across Newingmore and Down, they should well know that it won't be an easy fight just to close it whenever they wish to. on Councillor Taylor's point, I totally accept that turning up to a meeting with them and pleading our hearts, we can do that, but bankers don't necessarily have a heart to be pulled on. So it's really around the rural equality impact, and that's not against Councillor Hanlon, by the way. I saw her face there. Rural equality impact that it has, the distance that people need to go to. We need to understand what were the figures pre-COVID and what was the criteria that they're using to target these branches particularly. So I think we certainly need to be armed with that once we do meet with the Chief Executive, Francesca. But Chair, more than happy that everyone's very supportive of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Gareth. Yep, it seems everybody's in agreement there. Okay, so that motion is carried. That's brought us to the end of our meeting this evening. Thanks to everybody for their cooperation, and we'll take care and see you all soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, Chair. Good day.